DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
Welcome to DW's Living Planet. I'm Jen Ayeko Kumet. Animals are a part of our lives, but apes are even closer to us, so much such that we decided to dedicate this whole show to celebrate our closest relative in the animal world. The world of apes is under threat. We hear from Malaysia, where authorities are doing all it takes to protect them.
We want to keep it for the future generation to see. We doesn't want it to be extinct from the wild.
And from Malaysia, we head to Kenya and find out what's being done to save the chimpanzees.
If you take the chimpanzees and release them back in the wild in the country of origin, where those guys eat them, they can easily kill this because they don't know how to behave like wild ones.
Stay tuned for those stories and a lot more. The world's population of orangutans has declined by half in just 16 years. Wildlife advocates are ringing alarm bells about the continued deforestation of the apes' habitat. Indeed, the heartbreaking viral video of an orangutan trying to save its home from loggers drew worldwide attention to their plight. Not only is keeping forests intact vital for animals, but also for humanity. Maria Bakalapolo takes us through the tale of orangutans in Malaysia, where the government established a wildlife center dedicated to saving this endangered species. But that's not all. Semango Wildlife Center also allows visitors to see semi-wild orangutans in their natural rainforest habitat, swinging from trees and vines.
A ranger leads a crowd of 100 tourists into the forest to see if the orangutans will come down to eat today. They are kept at a distance, and the ranger asks the people to be especially quiet, as the orangutans tend to be fearful of humans.
We start to call them.
The orangutans here spend most of their time in the forest, seeking their favorite fruits. But some do return to the platforms of the feeding station for supplemental food. It's where visitors get a chance to see them, only two times daily. The Semango Wildlife Center is located 24 kilometers, or about 15 miles from Kuching, the capital of the Bornean state of Sarawak, in one of its oldest forest reserves. It was established in 1975 to care for wild animals that had been kept illegally as pets, orphaned, or found injured in the rainforest. Over the years, 42 apes have been surrendered or confiscated from the public. The center has been very successful at educating the local people about the orangutan's importance, as well as drawing in excited local and foreign visitors. Noor Amel Famida Binti Jadil is the head warden here.
To me, having this community support is very crucial, part of very important element in conservation per se. Because if we are only doing for the sake of conservation without the public supporting us, then it might not cause problem now, but in the future, yes. Conservation also means that people understand what we do, people appreciate what we do, and they support what we do.
The forestry department offers training and advice on how to deal with an orangutan if one ventures into a street or garden.
We want to keep it for the future generation to see. We doesn't want it to be extinct from the wild. If they are able to impart the image of this wild animal living in the wild setting, I believe we can actually touch the heart, and orangutan now is a medium for them to appreciate nature more, so that in the future they will also become our assistants to protect not just orangutan but other parts of nature, the forest, other animals as well.
There are a mere 30 orangutans living at Semengo, and the forest reserve is getting close to capacity. But the work here is vital to the future of their survival. The next step will be major, says Oswald Braken-Tizen, general manager of the Sarawak Forestry Corporation.
One of the things that we always have in our policy is to ensure that all our protected areas are connected. And the bigger picture of connectivity in Sarawak or in Borneo is called the Heart of Borneo Initiative.
The Heart of Borneo is a conservation agreement initiated by the Worldwide Fund for Nature to protect the single largest stretch of rainforest left standing in Southeast Asia, a 220,000 square kilometer forested region on Borneo Island, covering an area the size of the whole of the UK mainland. The conservation effort is now getting support from the Sarawak state government.
This Heart of Borneo initiative is now covering the country called Brunei, Indonesia, and Malaysia state of Sabah and Sarawak. So we are now looking at more than 2 million hectares of land.
This additional land is largely owned by the government, while some areas are land previously logged and slated for replanting initiatives.
But you're looking at the wildlife point of view, all those areas are in fact very, very important. And if we allowed connection between all these areas that are protected and unprotected, where community use and are allowed corridors, this will ensure that species like orangutan, all the bigger mammal, crowded leopard for that matter, which need large area for survival, will continue to survive in this big area.
Fragmented populations of orangutans face challenges with their ability to find food and limits to their breeding pool, which makes these corridors and larger preserves essential. Whereas orangutans benefit by having their reserves and corridors, people too need to know how to interact with them. As tourism becomes a bigger objective, rangers do warn that animals are wild. Even though they do not usually attack humans, they can and do bite if they feel under threat. For example, they warn us not to use a tripod or monopod because the orangutan may feel threatened, seeing it as a rifle or a blowpipe. For DW, I'm Maria Bakalapulo in Sarawak, Borneo.
Well, we just heard about orangutans in Malaysia. These are just one type of apes. Chimpanzees are another, and they too are increasingly under threat. We now head to Kenya, where Christopher Unga met Joseph Mayo, who has been taking care of rescued chimpanzees for 25 years. His report is now presented by Inike Mills.
Hello.
Joseph Mayo stands in front of an electric fence and calls his chimpanzees. The animals know him well, and after a short time, one of them climbs lazily out of the bushes. It's Poco, one of the oldest males here at 38. He was one of the first chimps to come here. Joseph Mayo and Poco have known each other since the first day the reserve for chimpanzees was established in Kenya more than 20 years ago. Over the years, the two have built a relationship.
It's like a friend, you know, it's like a friend. Poco is a very good chimp. He's good. And he knows me very much because every day we walk around here with him. And I feed him whenever he comes near the house there. And he is good.
A total of 35 chimpanzees live here in the Olpejeto Reserve in Kenya. They have been rescued from terrible conditions around the world, as orphans after their parents have been killed by poachers, or as pets that had to live in cages that were too small. Like Poco.
And Poco has he was kept in bad condition. He was kept in a very small cage for 9 years in Bujumbura, Burundi. When he arrived here, he could only stand up and walk upright because he was in a cage for many years. And he could not walk on foot like normal chimp.
Now they live here in two hordes on an area of about 1 square kilometre. They can walk for hours, sleep in trees, and simply be chimps. Feeding is once a day. The chimpanzees jump excitedly as Joseph throws the rations through the fence, one after the other.
Yeah, all these, they have names. They're called Z, Mary, Oscar, Saidia, Edward. And there's another two there in that small enclosure. There's two. They escape. Ali. Ali is the smartest one who knows how to coil the wire and jump out of the fence.
Like Saidia, she came here as an orphaned baby chimp and is still afraid she won't get enough food.
Saidia. Okay. You see, they like it. You see, that noise is calling. The others now will come. They know it's feeding time.
Joseph smiles. Saidia, which means help, gets an extra banana, of course.
Saidia, what are you doing?
The chimpanzees need him. They will stay with him as long as they live.
If you take these chimpanzees and release them back in the wild, in the country of origin, where those guys eat them, they can easily kill this because they don't know how to behave like wild ones. They cannot hide themselves in the bush. And it's a better life to be here.
So there's no sign of this reserve disappearing. On the contrary, new chimps continue to arrive. Only last year, a very young animal joined them. It seems Joseph Mayo will be here for a long time with his chimpanzees.
That report by Christopher Unger was presented by Inike Mills. This is DW's Living Planet with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet. From orangutans to chimpanzees, the world of apes is big. Still to come, we shall hear what Rwanda is doing to save the gorillas, and we shall crown it all with expert knowledge. The great apes, yes, that's what we are talking about in this show. Bonobos, chimpanzees, gorillas, orangutans, and several others. It's a large family. So why are we dwelling so much into these animals? Simple, because each of them is under threat world over. Encroachment on their habitats, economic activities, climate change, name it all, the world of apes is not at peace. We cross over to neighboring Rwanda and learn more about what's happening to the gorillas there. And for that story, here is Eva De Vries.
In the town of Musanze, south of the green, lush Volcanoes National Park, it's hard not to get caught up in a gorilla fever. There are hotels with names like Gorilla View Lodge and Villa Gorilla, and there seems to be a gorilla statue at just about every turn. The numerous cafes cater to the endless stream of tourists that flock here before they embark on the famous so-called gorilla treks. The mountain gorillas of the Volcanoes National Park attract thousands of visitors per year. The Volcanoes National Park sits between the Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and the Mgahinga Gorilla National Park in Uganda. Together with Uganda's windy, impenetrable forests, these four parks constitute the last remaining mountain gorilla habitats in the world. About 20 kilometers north of Musanze lies the headquarters of the Volcanoes National Park in northwestern Rwanda, the starting point for gorilla trekking tours. On the horizon, steep rocky volcanoes tower over green plantations and quiet villages. Veronica Vecellio is program manager at the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund, a research institute dedicated to saving the endangered mountain gorilla. She explains that some of the gorilla groups are being visited by their researchers every day to observe their health, location, and sexual reproduction.
You can connect to them by understanding their action. Just being so similar to humans, they have like facial expressions, body postures that make them much more understandable than any other animal.
But the mountain gorilla's habitats have been lost to civil war, deforestation, and agriculture. and as a result, their population has dwindled. Researchers say that in the late 1970s, there were only around 250 mountain gorillas left in the wild. The species was thought to be headed for extinction. Fortunately, the work of the Diane Fossey Fund and other organizations have helped recover their numbers.
We have 480 gorillas, mountain gorillas, in the Virunga Massif and other 400 in Bwindi Forest. So we have 880 mountain gorilla divided into these two populations that they cannot cross because they are geographically separated by human settlements. These 880 gorilla were counted in 2010 and 2011, so the last census is done in the Virunga and in Bwindi.
But despite the fact that the population is increasing, mountain gorillas are still vulnerable because there are so few of them left.
The threats for gorilla that are induced to human we can somehow control, but what is induced by nature we cannot. So like the poaching, that even if it's that is decreasing here in Rwanda, so it's controlled, there are anti-poaching patrol, but still exist. The humans have been the main threats for gorillas in the past, but now is the best hope for their future. We have to be there.
The World Wildlife Fund says gorillas are at risk of contracting diseases as a result of frequent interaction with humans. Climate change and habitat destruction are also persistent threats. Prosper Wungeli is the manager of the Volcanoes National Park. He's responsible for minimizing human impacts both in and around the park, and says that it's important to involve often locals and entire communities in their conservation efforts.
Especially communities are participating, they are benefiting, they benefit from what they do themselves, like potters, like handcraft makers, but also to operators, ecology. So you can see the benefit of the tourism at national level, national economy, but also locally. The communities are very, very strategic partners for the park.
Partnering with organizations like the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund, Wengeli and his team educate people on potentially gorilla-harming practices. And that includes tourists. Those who venture on gorilla tracks need to follow strict guidelines for their own safety and for the conservation of the gorillas.
Ensuring, protection, regular monitoring of groups, law enforcement, engaging local communities, clear education, awareness approach, ensuring that the communities benefit from our conservation effort, but also on the other hand, that the communities help us and participate in kind of improving, doing better protection, especially law enforcement.
A growing interest in the majestic creatures has indeed helped boost conservation efforts. But Uwengeli says it's still important to control the number of visitors. Towards this goal, the Rwandan government recently doubled the price of gorilla tracking permits from $750 to $1,500 per person. According to Uwengeli, this move illustrates Rwanda's attitude towards tourism. Higher prices mean fewer tourists, but more money towards conservation.
Reducing the pressure on mountain gorillas, but also addressing long-term challenges, supporting communities, increasing because the tourism revenue sharing has increased from 5% to 10% of park revenues.
The results of the latest mountain gorilla census conducted in 2016 will be announced later this month or next month. An exciting moment for Uwengeli, Fecelio and their colleagues, who've been working tirelessly to save these animals.
But are the gorillas faring as well as they hope?
We are positive and optimistic of an increase because we saw by monitoring the habituated gorillas that they are doing very well. So we expect that for the entire park there is an increase. We don't know how much this number will be, but we are highly optimistic.
Eva de Vries, DW, Musanze, Rwanda.
To get a good understanding of what exactly is happening to our closest relative in the animal world, I spoke to Elizabeth Key. She is the PR and Communications Manager with the International Animal Rescue in the UK. And I started by asking her just how big the threat to EPS is.
Well, I think it's massive, and I think it's a question of what is happening to the planet in terms of how human beings are encroaching into natural habitats of so many species, and particularly when you think of apes, that, and particularly, for example, the orangutan, the name means man of the forest. And they need a certain environment in order to survive. And we are encroaching and destroying the habitat on which they depend for shelter and food. So really the situation is now absolutely critical.
You've been talking about the orangutans, but we know that there's just more than that to the family of apes. Which type in particular is under the biggest threat?
I think they're all really seriously endangered. There are groups working to preserve them all and bring them back. Certainly for all three species of orangutan in Southeast Asia, they are now all listed as critically endangered. So there is no further step between that status and extinction. So although it may sound as though for some of them there are still thousands left, it's the speed of decline and the speed at which their habitat is being destroyed, which shows how serious the situation is for them all. Certainly, you know, none of these species is on the increase. But where efforts are being made to protect and preserve these species, we hear good news of how populations can still recover. So certainly at International Animal Rescue and among other conservation groups, we still believe there is hope and there is still a chance to bring these species back from the brink and to help their populations increase. But it really is a matter of cooperation and will among all the interested parties if these apes are going to be saved and if we're not going to one day wake up and say we've lost another species, which is simply tragic.
And there has been a lot of, finger pointing towards the palm industry as being the biggest threat to the apes' habitat. What is the trend like and what is your take on this one?
Certainly, yes. I mean, it's quite clear that the palm oil industry has been probably the main factor in the speed and the extent of deforestation. However, there are other industries too. There's pulp and timber. And some would say that if palm oil weren't being grown, then another crop would be grown that is lower yielding and that would require even greater forest destruction. So although most certainly palm oil is the industry that has created this massive deforestation, the answer is not simply to call for an end to the production of palm oil because something else will simply be grown in its place. So really the solution comes more from cooperation and taking into account the needs of indigenous people and wildlife. Rather than just calling for a boycott or a halt on palm oil production, which is just not going to produce a solution.
Now, we heard in the previous reports from Malaysia to Kenya their efforts to save the great apes. Do you think this is enough? Or put it the other way around, should we not worry at all?
I think we really do have to worry a great deal. I think the situation is still absolutely critical, and it's all very well when people talk about taking action. We have to see these actions being put into practice, and I think we certainly can't be complacent until we see signs that these efforts are working. I think everybody has a role to play in this, from individual consumers right through to the giant corporations that are producing palm oil and exporting it. And I think there has to be a real change in attitudes among all interested bodies, governments, local people, consumers. Every one of us has to change their attitude, and we constantly have to take into account the need to protect this habitat and to protect this species. It has to be factored in to every strategy that involves any forest exploitation. There has to be sufficient account taken of the habitat that is needed for people and for wildlife worldwide.
And you heard it all from the expert, Elizabeth Key, from the International Animal Rescue. Well, before we wind up the show, here is my colleague Charlie Shield with some interesting facts about apps. Now, Charlie, I'm quite very interested to hear what you have for us.
Yes, Jane, I've compiled some facts that you probably still aren't aware of about the great apes. So there's 7 species in total, and this includes the chimpanzee, the bonobo, the Borneo orangutan, the Sumatra orangutan, the eastern gorilla, the western gorilla, and of course, us. The only great ape out of the 7 that isn't threatened by extinction. So we even share the same blood types as the other great apes. A, B, AB, and O.
Is this to suggest that we could actually get apes donating blood to human beings?
Exactly. Theoretically, we could, provided that they have the same blood type as us. However, it's unlikely because, after all, we're still a different species and our blood probably differs in too many details. But a major difference between humans and the rest of the great ape family is the apes' inability to speak.
Oh, yes.
This is because great apes have a higher larynx or voice box, which means there isn't enough space between the soft palate and the larynx for speech to be possible. The resonating cavity is simply too small. But although they can't speak, they can still communicate, and some brain scans of the great apes show that they have a kind of preliminary speech centre. Some apes have even been known to use more than 1,000 signs.
1,000 signs? That's quite awesome.
I know. They've been known to sign words like ball and beans to denote peas, bottle and match to say lighter, and bark in combination with sky and dog to refer to a helicopter.
I like the fact that one of the words is peas. They actually like peas. I think the whole world needs peas.
I think maybe this peas is referring to the food that they like to eat.
So it's another
option. I'm sure they're behind world peace as well.
Probably, yeah.
Most great apes in captivity are also really interested in other animals and each other. And this is one reason that they love to watch television.
They love to watch television.
Exactly. Especially documentaries of themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't like to see themselves
on TV?
Exactly.
Of course, we do like and they do like too.
Right? But they don't like it when the zoo vet makes an appearance on television.
Oh, yeah. Just like little children, when you see the doctor, you go screaming.
Exactly. They shake their fists and they shriek at the TV. Some great ape species, like the bonobo, are actually prone to getting the common cold, and they often have the sniffles.
Just like us human beings.
Exactly. And just like us human beings, bonobos have also been known to have a lot of sex.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Not just with each other, with themselves as well.
Okay.
Even though they don't reproduce more than other great apes. It's just a fun pastime for the bonobo. We humans share about 98.8% of our genetic profile with the chimpanzee and the bonobo. This is because we all descended from a single ancestor species that lived around 6 or 7 million years ago. But chimpanzees and bonobos are of the pan species, and we humans, of course, are the only living representatives of the Homo species. Some feel this distinction is arbitrary, arguing that humans, chimps, and bonobos are so similar that they should all belong to one species. But you can probably imagine that others think that this is a bad idea. So, for now, the separation of the species remain in place.
Interesting facts there. Thank you very much, Charlie, for those scientifically proven facts about the world of apes. I think I've learned something very interesting.
You're so welcome.
And that's our show for this week. For more on Living Planet, go to dw.com/livingplanet, where you'll find links to our media center and our podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud. And we are also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for DW Environment. Thank you very much for tuning in. From all of us in the studio, Eliane Gladucci, Steffi Brown, and me, Jane Ayeka-Kumet, it's a goodbye.